Today we have Courtney Lee joining us. Courtney is a highly accomplished recruitment expert who has successfully hired hundreds of candidates across a broad range of industries and geographies within North America. With a deep understanding of the North American job market and a passion for helping both job seekers and business owners succeed, Courtney's insights are invaluable. So today we'll be discussing job hunting tips, effective recruitment strategies for business owners, and the current trends shaping the job market. Courtney, tell us a little bit about your journey into the recruitment industry and what got you started.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. In terms of how I got started, it was a little bit of an interesting road because I didn't pick it as a career choice coming out of university. It kind of chose me, I guess, so to speak. And as a lot of people who are probably in the recruitment realm, no, most people who end up in recruiting fall into it. It doesn't exactly fit into HR as its own degree out of university. And there's elements of sales and business development, but it's not quite that either. So it's this interesting intersection of the two and a middle ground that if you have a background in sales or HR is generally how you can kind of pivot into that. So when I was in university at the time, I went to UBC. I did the co-op program because I had an arts degree. I was graduating from sociology. Originally, I thought I was going to go into law school and to be a lawyer. And then as I was going throughout my degree, I realized I didn't want to be in school for that much longer anymore. And I wanted to start working. So I pivoted and went into the arts co-op program to try to get work experience because I didn't really know what I was going to do. And I knew work experience was so valuable. So when I did that, part of the requirement in order to graduate the program was you had to create a LinkedIn profile. So I created a LinkedIn profile with my experience in fundraising. I used to work in nonprofit. And then I got a message from the internal recruiter at a big global recruitment agency asking if I was interested in an entry-level recruitment role and if I'd ever thought of recruitment. I'd never even heard of recruitment at the time. So it was something new, but I lied and said I did. And I was interested and knew exactly what recruitment was, went to the interview and yeah, got the job. It was great because I was excited and I hadn't actually graduated my degree yet. So that was one thing I did bring up to them in the interview, saying that I had one more term of my degree and they wanted to hire me. They just asked if I could do both at the same time and I managed to do it. It was a bit of a rough 4 months finishing my degree and doing recruitment full time, but I got through it and then ended up staying in that company for 7 years. So that was how I got into it and built my experience and got to learn about different industries and recruited across different specialisms and had great training. And that took me to where I am today, which is started my own recruitment company.
Amazing. I'd love to actually chat more about co-ops because we're going to talk so much about job hunting today, but I feel like a lot of people almost forget that it starts so much earlier. I feel like I'm always encouraging people that are in even high school or university to get as much work experience as they can through internships or co-ops or, of course, jobs themselves as well. So how did you feel like the co-op program impacted you? I mean, it sounds like it really guided you in a direction.
It did. I think I was so worried that I didn't have a business degree at the time. And I came from a generation where my parents or baby boomer generation. And at that point, degrees were the thing that really got you into the workforce. Whereas when I was in university and I was going through my experience at UBC, I started to realize that that's actually not as much the case anymore. And that experience lends more to it. I guess at the time I thought, particularly with the specific degree that I had, because I wasn't going to do further education beyond that degree. And I didn't want to focus in on the specialism that I graduated in, which was sociology. I wasn't going to be a professor or a sociologist. So I had to figure out a way to pivot in order to get that experience. So that's why I decided to go into the co-op program to see if it would give me a leg up. They did have internship programs at UBC as well, but co-op is paid work experience, whereas internships are unpaid. So they did have a finite number of students every year that applied to the co-op program and get accepted. So it is still something you have to apply and get accepted for. They don't just take anyone. So I had to work hard on that application. And then from there, you have to apply to all the jobs and you might not get a co-op placement.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that it was such a process and that there are numerous applications involved. In terms of when you review a job candidate now, if they're, let's say, young, like fresh out of university, how much of an impact does having those types of experience typically have?
Huge. Huge. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to create a resume if you never had work experience. A, there's not going to be anything to put in. B, if you kind of have an idea as to what, maybe not exactly the areas, but some sort of professional services role that you want, having any sort of professional work experience is great. As much as it's good to get work experience and put yourself through in order to pay the bills, let's say in the service industry or part-time work here or there, unless that's the area that you want to get into, it's not going to be deemed as relevant to somebody who did have work or experience, internships or co-ops from more of a professional services background, depending on what you're trying to get into. So that, as an employer, counts as work experience. So having worked at a company, done well, you can get references from the people that you worked with there. It really lends itself to your application for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That doesn't surprise me. Moving on from that co-op and internship component, what are the top three pieces of advice that you'd give if someone who's currently job hunting?
So yeah, I guess if you're beyond being a fresh grad and you're further into your career and you're looking for a position, I would say the biggest thing people don't do is tailoring their resumes to the job that they're applying for. It sounds quite basic, but a lot of people, and I understand why, because if you're job hunting actively and you need a job, it can feel like a full-time job in and of itself, applying and doing all the research yourself. So I understand it can be exhausting, but those resumes that do stand out are the ones that tailor their resume to the job description. And by that, it is also partly psychological. The people that have language that mirrors the job description and or let's say have gone to the company's website and have seen how the company brands itself, have they written their own internal messaging and put it out there, and you can match that type of language and tonality in your resume and in your email application, that goes a long way with employers.
Okay, yeah, that's such a good one. That's so interesting because I've thought about, of course, tailoring the experience to listing your most relevant experience to that role, but I haven't thought about it in terms of mirroring that company's language in the resume itself. So that's really interesting to hear. And yeah, building off of that, in terms of making your resume stand out, is there anything beyond that that you'd recommend?
I would always say getting in front of people is better. In order to stand out, rather than just, I guess, sending your application into the pool and hoping somebody picks it out, which does happen, generally people on the inside are good about going through all applications to make sure they generally don't miss applications that they do want to proceed further with. But I think it is always nice to do more research and connect with the appropriate hiring manager and HR talent acquisition person who would be involved in the hiring process. Why I say both and connecting with them, maybe adding them on LinkedIn, sending them a message, is because I find that a lot of people will go straight to, let's say, the hiring manager and try to connect further with them and bypass HR and the people and culture team, talent acquisition. And that can sometimes backfire because they're also part of the company and they're a stakeholder that's part of the hiring process. They might not be the final decision maker as to who gets hired on that specific team, but being part of the process, you don't want to cut them out. And you want to acknowledge them as well, for sure.
Okay. And in terms of adding them on LinkedIn, sending them a message, is there any specific messaging that you would recommend? Like, is this a situation where you should be asking to grab coffee? Or how does that look in terms of connecting with them in person?
I think in terms of if it's the direct hiring manager, I don't know about necessarily asking them to go grab coffee, but maybe pointing out that you're interested and you have applied and you can ask if they want to see your resume more directly and if you could send them an email. I think hiring managers, if they want to meet with you, they'll meet with you. I think it is good to ask people for a coffee, either A, look up people who have been at the company before in previous roles or who are on the team, finding out more about what it's like to work there. That's a good idea. But the direct hiring manager, I think it's best to just say how interested you are in the role. You've applied, happy to send your application to them directly if they want to review as well. But the coffees, I would say, would be good to ask people who are in similar roles, that the ones that you're applying to, and or other people who work at the company, maybe in similar roles adjacent or on the same team.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. In terms of finding these past or present team members, is LinkedIn your kind of go-to place for finding people, or do you use other tools as well?
I think more companies as well. I see marketing as well as just promoting what it's like to work there use employees as part of their branding. I've seen that a lot more recently. So a lot of companies will put team members who are highlighted on the careers page of their company website. So those people, having been at the forefront of more of the people and culture team and are promoting the brand from within, are great people to reach out to. I guess LinkedIn would be a great way. Maybe there's other, you could probably find them on social media. It's really easy to find people nowadays. It doesn't have to be LinkedIn, but going to see the website to see who's been highlighted on the careers page as a company success story, I think is also a really good tool. Other than just kind of scrolling through LinkedIn, it kind of highlights who would be a good person to chat to.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, being on the marketing side of things, I know that a big focus of ours in the industry right now is highlighting team members specifically on Instagram, because we find that a lot of younger job applicants are looking there to see company culture. So I feel like coming across more of those team members is definitely possible on Instagram in addition to LinkedIn. I feel like people always think of LinkedIn first and foremost, but then there are so many other resources, like you said, the careers page of the site and whatnot. So in addition to what you see making a good job applicant, What are the most common mistakes you see and how to avoid them?
There's a lot of formatting and grammatical errors. I think even basic things like putting your work experience in chronological order, people don't do. I find that people who send cover letters actually put a lot of effort more into the cover letters and the resumes. And resumes, I think, are more valuable than cover letters, especially these days. I would say that the best advice to looking into that, I guess, before you send out your applications would be to get other people to proofread it and to see how it reads. Because sometimes it's not about even just grammatical errors. It's about how your resume reads to somebody else. And I think getting a third party outsider to read it to see if it looks good and also makes sense based on the job you're applying for is a really good thing as well. The person who's reading it or the person who's receiving the information is the one that holds the most power in this instance. And if it's not being communicated properly from the person who's receiving the information, then it doesn't matter if it's grammatically correct or whatever, it's just not going to get the point across. So I think tonality and having somebody not just proofread it from a grammatical standpoint, but read it to see if it matches the job description and if it aligns and makes sense is also a good thing to do to make sure you get over the basic errors that a lot of people do on their day-to-day.
Yeah, I feel like I also hear so much mixed messaging about resume length. So what are your thoughts on resume length in terms of number of pages?
I think it's less about the length and it's more about the relevancy. I think the ones that are super long that people send that have every job, including part-time jobs that they've done since high school, probably doesn't need to be included. But if you have had a longer tenure in your career and you've had more relevant work experience, it's good to include that because it shows the experience that you have that's relevant to the role. Like somebody who's been working, just pick a random job, as an engineer since the 90s, if it's relevant and they're still in the engineering field, definitely put it on, even if it's 4 pages. If somebody maybe has only been working for a couple years, their resume might only be 1 to 2 pages, and that's okay. But I think sometimes when people talk about length, they cut out relevant jobs as well that they've had to make it fit into like a 2-page format. And then sometimes on the receiving end, I look at those and then people ask for very high salaries and go, well, I've worked for 20 plus years. And you read the resume and you're like, but it's only 2 pages and it doesn't look like you've had 20 plus years experience. So it's also to do with if you're going to ask for that high salary, you have to show that you have that work experience. And if you cut it out because you're worried about length of pages, then that's not going to help your cause.
Okay. So relevancy over length.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. And how important do you find that networking is in the job search process? And what networking tips would you give to the audience?
Networking is important. I think throughout COVID, I think everybody probably globally thought that it was going to become or the working world is going to become more of an online phenomenon. And we were only going to be doing virtual hiring fairs, virtual networking events, etc. But I think post COVID, in person has become, A, it's coming back. And then B, I think it's become more valuable because going through the virtual only world and then coming out of it, I think people have realized that that in-person interaction is still really valuable and you get more out of it rather than when you're just on a screen. So I've been to personally some virtual networking events versus in-person, and in-person still beats it. So I would say as much as you can physically get out there into different events, the better it will be for your career, as opposed to just sticking to social networking or doing any sort of virtual networking.
Yeah, thank God the in-person events are back. I feel like life was just so boring when every meeting was in person, and going to those networking events online. Obviously, there are some great ones. There are some that I do really enjoy, but also it's just really not the same. And even just meetings in person, I find that when it comes to an online meeting, they tend to be so much more concise and hyper-focused on exactly what value you're trying to get out of the meeting. Whereas an in-person meeting, there's more room to actually get to know each other, and it feels like a more general conversation. Yeah. And I found that more usually comes of that anyways, because there's an opportunity to chat and then realize, oh, you have this friend in common who you can connect, and so on and so forth, where when it's just this meeting that's hyper-focused on one topic, there actually less comes of it, I find.
Yeah, and it's the in-between pieces to those events too, because you can go to these online virtual networking events, and then sometimes they'll put you, I don't know how it works, but they put you into breakout rooms, and all of a sudden it like moves you from one room and you're mixed in with a smaller random group, which I guess is to mirror the same if it were to be in person. But then you don't get the in-between. I found that some of the most valuable parts of a networking event are when you're actually moving physically from the big auditorium to the small room and you're chit-chatting with people as you're walking. It's like in virtual, I compare it to like the structure of a sentence. Like in a virtual networking event, you get the meat and potatoes of the sentence, but you don't get the little filler words.
Interesting way of thinking of it. Well, yeah, because it's the difference between those genuine connections versus the forced connections. And I find that sometimes when there's all of these prompts and stuff within the breakout rooms, you might not even get to have the conversation that you actually want to have. Whereas in those in-between moments, you can talk about what is actually of interest to both of you. So it just creates a more genuine connection.
Yeah.
But then going back to the more virtual side of things as a positive, how do you find that social media has positively impacted the career world and how people can use it to their advantage?
I mean, it's definitely brought people, it's been able to interconnect people more easily. And I think it's allowed for more global connections and mobility potentials since COVID. And I think that that's been definitely a positive. It's definitely easier access to be able to get to know people. And there's no physical boundaries, which is kind of nice. You don't think about it as often as to where specifically they are. And it's allowed people to connect with people in different parts of the world and do business more internationally, which I think has been a really positive thing as well. So that would be my takeaway as a strong positive for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's so nice to be able to develop those international connections. I know for me, if I know that I'm going to a city in a couple of months, I make a point of looking to connect with people in that city far before that so that I can have those in-person meetings with them. Where before that, I mean, that wouldn't be possible. It would just be having to go out into events and in-person spaces once you're there. And I feel like there's so much more of an opportunity to start developing those connections and then meet in person. So yeah, it's so nice to have those options now. And now turning things over from people who are looking to find a job to people who are looking to hire, do you have any advice for business owners who are managing their own hiring internally?
Yeah, I think depending on, there's so many different ways to answer this question, because there's smaller companies that are just starting out who are trying to bring on their first couple hires. And then there's the big, large companies that have the marketing and branding budget and the ability to put more effort into that.
Yeah, maybe let's separate it into the two. So for very small businesses that are looking to make their first few hires and they don't have maybe any experience going through that process, what would you recommend to set them up for that initial, let's say their first hire ever?
Yeah, I guess once they've decided what their first hire is going to be, going about it would be to, unless it's like, I guess, an HR hire, I would say the best thing would be to get some first as well advice from an HR consultant or somebody, employment lawyer, to know what some of the legalities are around even going through the hiring process. I think a lot of small businesses and companies still don't know that you're going to be required to post the salaries at any given point online when you're advertising a job. So that's one thing where, as a small business owner, it's probably not the forefront of your mind. You're probably thinking, just put out a job ad and see what happens. But there are some even nuances to putting out the job ad. So I would say get some, just cover your bases and get some advice before you go through that process. And then, yeah, posting on different job sites is a good thing. Getting your name out there. I think if you have the ability to put it out to social media, it would definitely help as well. Looking up different targeted places rather than just going for the Indeeds of the world or the Glassdoors to post your jobs. Look for targeted job sites that would allow you to maybe reach your target audience a bit more. So I guess architects have their own association, accountants have their own association. You could post jobs on those specific websites as opposed to just relying on public domains. And then once you're going through that, I would say part of your process will still probably have to be active outreach to people. I think unless you're in an industry where there's been lots of layoffs, which are obviously unfortunate, I think there's probably going to be still a need for active outreach to candidates. So just note that there might have to be some proactive reach outs to specific people on your end and to maybe, so quote unquote, sell the company and the job to them, especially if you're a small business nobody's ever heard of. So that would be something just to note as well. I would say keeping interviews more concise is better. It's always good to get as much insight into the candidate. I guess as an example, I've seen companies do 5+ interviews, some panels, some technical tests, etc. If there's ways for you to condense and combine those steps into maybe 2 to 3 interviews, I think that would help. Especially candidates who are actively looking, they're generally applying and interviewing for multiple jobs at once. So if you draw out the process for so long, you might miss out on the candidate you wanted because there were so many steps. I'm not saying you need to cut out all of the steps your process, but I think a lot of companies don't think about condensing it. And there's ways to do that.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned those first two, because I think that for Devin and I in our finding our way in hiring, I think that having a meeting with you was so beneficial in terms of getting a broader lay of the land. And then as well, in terms of those more niche platforms for posting, that has made a world of difference for us. Like the difference between us posting on somewhere like Indeed versus somewhere like Monday Girl or I Love Creatives, the candidates that we find are so much more tailored to us. And I find that we get less applicants that are, when you can kind of tell the applicants are doing like a, I don't know what it's called, but it's like when they apply to just so many jobs and they are not even necessarily interested in that particular role. I find that places like Indeed, I end up getting more of those.
Yes.
Whereas in these highly targeted platforms, people are already interested in those types of roles to even be on that platform. It's a lot less weeding through all of the resumes for us. So that's made a huge difference. In terms of a bigger organization that's hiring, are there any pieces of advice that you'd have for them?
I would say the same applies with trying to condense your interview process to finite amount of times that a person, especially if it's an in-person interview, physically has to come in and take time out of their day. I think if you can get your point across and assess the candidate, even if it's maybe come in once or twice, but take longer time out of your day rather than having to come back and forth a lot, I think that that does also make a difference. I still think a mix of virtual and in-person is good for both sides, because the first one, if it is virtual, you kind of get to know right off the bat rather than having somebody come in or waste your time to meet somebody in person if it's not going to be a right fit. So you can weed out on both sides whether it's going to be the right fit for you faster. I would say for bigger companies, a lot of times there's a lot of politics that can sometimes get involved with hires. I think trying to make sure you iron that out and sort it out on the back end before bringing a candidate into the process is quite key. I've seen a lot of politics in bigger companies deter candidates, or the process looks so disjointed because everybody wants to have a say in who gets hired that it can ruin the process and affect the candidates. So internal politics are one that I think on the back end, before you open up the hiring process, need to probably be ironed out as well.
Okay, yeah, that's really helpful. I feel like it can be such a time-consuming process. So it sounds like getting organized beforehand and making sure all of the details are ironed out, and then seeing where you can also be most time efficient once the process actually begins with interviewing and all of that is really important. What are some red flags that business owners can look out for during the recruitment process? So maybe not so much as something that they might disregard on a resume, but rather a red flags in the interviews themselves.
For business owners, I would say listening is going to be the best key element. Asking open-ended questions are better than closed questions. A lot of times I do see hiring managers or business owners asking questions that lead candidates to a specific answer. And that generally happens when a company sees or is in meetings with a candidate that they really like and they really want. And so they're trying to A, sell this candidate on their company and their job that they're hiring for, and B, they want them so bad that they're not even realizing that they're asking leading questions to kind of get the answers that they want to hear, as opposed to asking more open-ended questions and then listening to what the person's actually saying. A lot of the times, business owners will get so excited about strong candidates and then they move too quickly, and then the candidate sometimes gets spooked, or they ask leading questions because they want this candidate so bad, they want to hear what they want to hear without actually thinking of A, is this person interested, or B, is this person even going to take an offer if we even bothered to put it out there. So I'd say acute listening in terms of asking more open-ended questions to hear what they're really thinking is really the key thing.
It's like dating. You can't give the desperate energy.
Yeah, you can't
Everyone
give the
gets scared
energy.
Of the desperate energy.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. And then as well, how important do you find is a cultural fit in hiring, and how can you assess if they are a cultural fit?
I think cultural and company team fit is more important for companies than skill set. Now, they can't have no skills, and that's relevant to the job, but if they've got the right attitude or personality, they generally get hired more than somebody who had all the skills and didn't have a great personality, because those hard skills, the more tangible ones that are relevant to the job, are trainable with the right person, as opposed to it being somebody who has a bad attitude but can do it all and they'll upset everybody else on the team. So that I found is more of a key element in the hiring process. How to assess it? It all depends on, I guess, what each company is looking for. Some companies have said everybody is very collaborative. We don't want people who just want to work from home all the time and not come into the office. It is very much a team building environment. So when you're asking questions, it's about the questions you ask and are you comfortable coming into the office? It's like, well, they say yes, but only up to a maximum of X amount of time. It's like, is that really going to be the right fit for this company that's super collaborative and going in more than they have to? Probably not. So asking those questions that are, I guess, not quite as point blank as how do you get along with people, but asking questions around that are adjacent that will lead you to hearing if it's going to be a right fit are the key things. There's no other real way to do it. It's just about asking the right questions and listening to what they have to say and the way that they present themselves, really.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like determining what is our company culture is important to actually asking the correct questions and really being honest with yourself as an organization of what are the most important parts of our culture too. Because I find that sometimes people think of their company culture a certain way, but the reality of the company culture might be a bit different. I feel like it's like an honesty exercise of like, what is really our company culture before we can assess candidates on it as well.
Yeah. And then I think even less from as broad of a perspective. I agree with that. I think it's also within, there's like micro cultures within the organization. Like each team has its own slight different dynamic and culture to it. So as like a hiring manager on a specific team, even looking at the scope of your different personality types in your team, it's like, okay, there's positives and things to be worked on for every person, positives and areas of improvement. So just being honest with where the areas of improvement are as well in your team is going to be key in assessing who would come in to maybe offset that or help with some of those things, or who would really not jive with this person. Like just being honest with the types of personalities before you're going in to assess a candidate too.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that I've really learned through having a business partner is the seeing how we're able to balance or offset each other's weaknesses and then balance the strengths so that the overall strengths are more well-rounded. So I feel like, yeah, I always think of that within a team as well, because seeing it so clearly within a partnership has shown me that it's kind of like pieces of a puzzle. And if you can make sure that they all fit together to create this whole strong unit, that can be so important too. What do you find are the benefits of using a recruitment agency versus managing the hiring process internally?
Cost would probably be the biggest thing. I don't think there's any company that I've talked to as a whole that's been like, I love recruiting. Like, I love recruitment. I love just talking to people all day long, every day without getting a break. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that.
Do you love it though? Do you feel like it's tiresome to be, because that is your whole world? Or do you feel like because you went the agency route, people who go the agency route are more inclined to feel that way?
People who, you have to be more on an introverted, extroverted scale. You have to lean more extroverted for sure to be, I think, in the recruitment world. You don't have to be, but I think you'll struggle more than somebody who is extroverted, because I think you'll get drained by people more quickly than somebody who is extroverted, who gets their energy from other people. I've only ever met one person in my life who's 100% extroverted. So I think for anyone, even if they lean more extroverted, it can drain you depending on, let's say, how many calls you have in a day, etc. But it is just people, people, people all the time. So yeah, I think for anybody, it can be draining for sure. Those jobs where you get necessarily a lot of downtime in between to just kind of be on your own doing some more internal work. I guess now it is for me because, you know, on the back end, we've got so many other things going on. It's not just, I'm not sitting there like, well, I was at a recruitment agency when I worked for somebody else recruiting only all day, every day. There's other stuff that I have to do. So that has been nice in terms of offsetting the day-to-day of talking, because sometimes by the end, your throat does get dry and you are exhausted.
So, I have a feeling.
Yeah, you have to like people though. Like, I definitely like people and I like it, but I can understand. Again, nobody's 100% extroverted. Everybody needs rest. Everybody needs some time for themselves. So it can be draining. So I think if there was an easier way for companies to outsource it all the time, then they might. But I think part of it is cost. For some companies, it could be brand. They don't trust external recruiters to deliver the brand messaging of the company and what it'd be like to work there successfully, or as successfully as they would if they did it themselves. So part of it is a sense of control and trust and ownership over the brand. But I think recruitment agencies, I know they get a lot of flack because they are quite sales driven and focused, especially if you're at a larger agency, because there are just different KPIs and targets you have to hit. It's just the nature of the business. Nobody's fault. It's just kind of the way it is. But I think in terms of partnering with the right agency or a couple right agencies at any given point are key, and developing those partnerships, I think, is going to be key. People always ask me, I remember when I was at an agency, like, what sets you apart from other recruitment agencies? This is when I worked at a large agency. And to be honest, in terms of the recruitment process, especially from large agency to large agency, there's not a lot that's different. A lot of it is quite similar in terms of, I guess, the steps. But really what sets somebody apart in the process is the recruiter that you're dealing with. So somebody who can understand people well, who can understand the business, who's a good listener, who understands the skill set. I think a good recruiter is a good listener to what the client needs is going to be quite key. Somebody who's not too pushy, but can still get the job done, I think are the key things that have stood out from when companies have liked working with recruitment companies and agencies over ones who haven't and are just trying to, quote unquote, make a sale or get somebody in the door so that they can get paid. I know that annoys companies. So, yeah.
Okay. So those are all good ones. What are the current trends you're seeing in the North American job market?
Depends on what industry you're in. I think as a whole, unemployment is still up from obviously COVID fatigue and everything that's gone on since COVID. Tech has obviously taken quite a big hit across the whole of the industry. I'm still seeing some layoffs. Not as bad as it was in the past couple of years. They're not mass layoffs as much, but still not great. I find the US has gotten gets hit faster, and then it trickles to Canada. We're a little bit behind in our market and economy. So the things that affect them do affect us, but not quite at exactly the same time. But I think still with interest rates being so high, as well as I guess everybody day to day cutting down their spending because they don't have the jobs, that's quote unquote good to reset the economy. And I guess the government's eyes, it's not necessarily great for the job market, but there are still hires. I think part-time roles and contract roles, so short-term coverages, are up in terms of job postings. And I think full-time permanent positions are down. So if you're a job seeker looking to, I guess, pay the bills in the interim, maybe taking on some contracts or short-term coverages would be a good thing to do until the market sort of rebounds a bit more. But overall, depending on which area, and there's still in-demand skills that are always going to be needed. So anybody in trades is going to be still hot in demand. There's a lot of job opportunities out there. Anybody who's like in the legal industry, so lawyers are still very strong in demand. Yeah, so some professional services are still fine and going okay. But I think it's, you know, people in HR, a lot of them, and tech is struggling. I know retail has taken a bit of a hit overall. A lot of stores have been closing, big names that we've seen as well. So it's not amazing time, but it's definitely on the up. But I think over the next year, I'm not an economist, but economists say it's going to get better. And so hopefully unemployment will go down and there's going to be more opportunities. But I think if you can capitalize on following what is going on in the market and what jobs are being posted right now, it's a lot of contract and short term, taking those on in the interim and just giving yourself a bit of grace until the job market fully rebounds is okay to do.
Yeah, that's definitely something I've noticed as well in just speaking with different people, is that people looking for full-time are saying that they're really struggling to find a role, whereas people who are freelancers and looking for more contract work are saying that they're actually quite busy.
Yeah.
So that is, yeah, interesting to hear. In terms of industries specifically, which ones are you seeing the highest demand for right now?
So anybody in trades is still high in demand. So it could be like electricians, plumbers, like anybody in a skilled trade. Areas of construction are still quite strong as well. Not all, but a lot of them. Legal, accounting is still quite strong. Anybody who's in a tax specific type role. It's funny, it's always the unsexy roles that are the ones that are always going to be high in demand and are always the ones that are more recession proof or safe in these types of economies. The ones that are hit the hardest are the ones that more people want to do, but are, I guess, deemed by companies as more of a nice to have, not a must have. So a lot of people in HR, I guess, I think HR is crucial and it can be viewed quite differently. It should be viewed quite differently. But to a lot of companies, it's not in terms of people and culture. Marketing also seems more like a nice to have. So it's those types of roles where I've seen the most hit. But
yeah, I mean, that's definitely, as a marketer, something that we've had to consider, because we are considered a nice to have of what types of businesses are more recession proof and how can we target those types of businesses to make it so that although we're a nice to have, we'll probably be kept on because they'll keep doing well even in difficult times. That's been important for us to consider and something that we didn't necessarily consider when we were first starting out. How have you found that the remote work environment has impacted recruiting strategies now that people can be looking for candidates all over the world potentially?
It's definitely been positive. It's cut out a lot of time in terms of now they do, a lot of companies do their first interview virtually, which has saved commuting time. It's saved time on the employer side from having to book boardrooms, go in or go out to meet people. Sometimes I've had companies pre-COVID where they're like, oh, this role is replacing somebody who currently works there, so we have to do this offsite somewhere. Whereas now you could just do it online and you don't have to worry about finding a space where you won't get run into by the person you might be replacing. So things like that have made it a lot easier, and you can talk to people in different time zones. There's companies I worked with who are like, we want to find the best person, so we will hire them wherever they are in the world and we will move them over, so to speak. So in that instance, obviously having the virtual element has been really positive and valuable in the experience. It's also allowed for easier sharing of case studies and presentations. Sometimes people are asked to do take-home assignments and present back, and fumbling in a boardroom with a projector and making sure the wires connect and the Wi-Fi works, and then you have to bring your laptop on the candidate side is so painful. So having it just being able to screen share on like Zoom or whatever has been really good as well.
Yeah. Do you find that because of this, people are finding even higher quality talent within the same budget in terms of salary because they can look to anywhere in the world as opposed to having just one area to be hiring from?
It depends on their take. But I think a lot of companies still would prefer to hire more locally for whatever reason that they have. I think the ones that do definitely do broaden the range. I don't know if it makes it more cost effective, because if you're a Canadian company and you've opened it up and you're interested in a brand or similar companies that are in the US or in different parts of Europe, it's not going to be more cost effective because you have to account for the differences in currency. So not always. And then also moving costs, if you're going to help them move, it isn't necessarily cost effective. But it does help widen the pool to give you more options.
Mm-hmm. And what do you foresee being the biggest challenges for job seekers in the upcoming few years? I know that hopefully the economy is on the up and up, but in terms of overall challenges, what do you see?
I think depending, I know the hot topic is AI. Everyone's so worried about AI taking their jobs, but I don't even think that that's going to be in the next couple of years. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to take away people's jobs. I think it'll probably enhance different jobs depending on what job you're in. There might be some that are more, I guess, online support or customer service focused that it could take away. But for the most part, for most jobs, I don't think it's going to be taken away by AI. Like AI can't necessarily do what an electrician does. Yeah, they can't do everything. So I think it'll help to enhance different jobs. But I think people are most worried about, other than the economy, AI. And I would say that for the next couple of years, I don't see it being a threat to everyone losing their entire livelihood. I would say what I see is a lot of people who are struggling in some ways to find jobs is more internal focus. I talk to so many people daily who are open to looking at new opportunities or open to jobs or have decided they want to pivot industries and don't want to be in a specific industry they've had work experience in and change, but they don't exactly know what they want to do. They're just open to new opportunities. So it's almost like some people expect people to have a wand and tell them how to get the job or do what they should do, but they don't know for themselves or have an idea of exactly what that is. I think a lot of it is internal focus as to what you want to do, as opposed to it being something that's necessarily always economical as factors. I would say that inward, a lot of people are just kind of lost when they're job searching and they don't necessarily know the best course of action and what to do. And I think a lot of that is sitting down and focusing and planning as to where you see yourself and what type of career path you want to do in the future. What that looks like for yourself is quite key, and less about the things like compensation, like where you want to be money-wise or where you want to be, I guess, location-wise. Those are easy to figure out. I think it's more existentially. So many people I talk to, almost everyone, are like, they're open to opportunities, but they don't know what.
That's so interesting. I didn't really think of that. Are there any resources that you recommend for that kind of sit down, brainstorm your career path session? Are there any templates or guidelines that you've recommended to people?
That's the thing is, like, because I think most people don't realize that they're not sure about what they want to do, that I think it's more common than there aren't necessarily resources that I pointed people up to, but it is more just having conversations with, like, okay, let's work backward. If you opened opportunities, why? What are some of the things you like doing? What are some of the things you don't like doing? And then pinpointing some career paths and then maybe talking to different people in those areas that could be potentials to sort of weed out what this big open wide, I don't know, to maybe some options for you to then pivot. And then it's looking up different qualifications, maybe different courses that you could do to get into that specific type of role. But I think part of it is people are so, especially people who are working at the moment, they're so bogged down into what their 9-to-5 is that it's exhausting to probably think of anything else beyond that after. And I've been there. They know they want to maybe change jobs. They want to get out, but they don't know what, who, or where. So it's the really sitting down and thinking about it.
Yeah. And I think a bit of a work backwards too. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, where do I ideally want to be? And then, like you said, talking to some people that are where you ideally want to be, and then finding out after that conversation, is that even somewhere that you still want to be? Is that something that still sounds appealing? And then working back from there of what do I need to do to get there? Because what I see a lot of, especially in early 20s, is a lot of, I'm going to do all of these courses and do all of these things that will prep me for this kind of like overarching goal. But then getting to the point where they reach that point and realize, oh, all of this was for nothing because I actually don't even want to do this. Yeah. And it's like, okay, I just wasted years or months or whatever it was. So making sure that the goal really is the goal, I feel like, is also so important.
Yeah, I think working backwards is good. It's maybe more like, where do you want to see your life? Because I had that too. Like, I worked at a big agency for so long, and it's just this, you feel like you're on a hamster wheel day to day of like every day. It's maybe not the exact same, but you've got targets and it's month to month or quarter to quarter. And once you hit that, okay, it's like, woo, we celebrate. And then you do it all again for a year, quarter, or whatever. And then you're kind of just stuck in this hamster wheel and it's hard to know what you want. And then I remember I would be like scrolling on Instagram and I'd see all these people, like, I guess could be influencers or whoever, sometimes friends who were just like out traveling and like working. And I was like, oh, so jealous. Like, I want that life. And then I was like, wait a minute, how can I get that life? How can I do more of that? And then that already was like a work backwards from, okay, what are some of the steps you need to take to get to the life you want, as opposed to it being, what specific job do I want next? Maybe it's a bit bigger than that. Maybe it's, okay, where do you want to see your life and how can your job fit into that more so?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I meant about talking to people that are in the roles that you want to have, because sometimes you have that conversation and it's so much less glamorous than you think. Like, I remember when I was young, I wanted to be a stylist, and then I talked to a stylist and they're like, oh yeah, it's schlepping suitcases and rolling racks of clothes around, and it's not actually as glamorous. And of course there are those glamorous moments, but the day-to-day might look so different than you actually imagine it. So yeah, getting really clear on that can be so important.
Yeah.
So what is one overarching piece of advice that you would leave with anyone today, both in career or personal, or just anything that you feel like has really impacted you?
I guess for me, it is that a lot of times people in their work feel stuck. People feel stuck in their career path or their life, and they don't know what to do next. I think for me, what really changed my mindset was just realizing that there is the ability to kind of get the life that you want. And there are ways to do it. You just have to be comfortable taking risks. I think that for a lot of people, they are worried about change and taking risks. And so I would say that, you know, the biggest thing that helped me in, I guess, life and career was like just overcoming the fear of taking different risks and just going for it and just seeing what could work. I guess bigger picture, I think COVID taught us there's always different existential things that could come into your life that you did not see coming or knew existed. So taking risks rather than just sitting there wondering or going through your day to day if you're not happy with it would be something that I would say focus on and take ownership of it and just go for it rather than second guessing. And I think that change, being comfortable with change, is going to be a big thing. Changing jobs, changing careers, changing companies, pivoting in your company, branding wise, like just.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you really have to get comfortable with change to be successful. Mm-hmm. It's like that saying, your dream life will cost you your old one. It's like recognizing that you can't get to that ideal place without letting go of the things that are the reason that you're not there. But I feel like people kind of try to like hold on to all of these things and bring it with them to their dream life. But it's recognizing that some things have to go as new things come in. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for all of the valuable lessons that you shared with everyone today. I feel like if I was a job seeker right now, I'd be eating this episode up. So thank you so much for all of this. And where can everyone find you in workshop?
Thanks. Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It was so fun and I loved having this conversation. Workshop. You can find us so many different places. LinkedIn, we've got a page. You can follow me, Courtney Lee, on my own personal LinkedIn. Harsev Oshan is my business partner. He has his personal LinkedIn as well. Workshop, recruiting and consulting, our LinkedIn page, workshop.consulting on Instagram, as well as our website, workshoprecruitment.ca.
Amazing. Thank you. Yay. That's a wrap.